welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jamp and Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
Hello.
This week, we'll be talking about fixing foxes and producing puppies.
Fixing foxes and reducing
puppies.
Reducing.
Nice. Okay, a nice, happy...
Nobody would want to reduce puppies.
No. Well, unless you're reducing puppies to make more dogs, because they grow into dogs.
Oh.
Yeah. I prefer... dogs are nicer.
Well, you know, they've both got their merits. Before we started this episode, I said to Luke off mic...
You did.
...that...
we are recording this... about half an hour before the exit poll for the UK general election comes out. Yep. And
December
I am
12th.
Feeling so anxious. And Corey said to me, don't worry, Luke, there's nothing in this episode that will make you sad.
He will
How
find
true
something.
That is, we will see.
Look, if you find something, you've made yourself sad. You can't put that on me.
But I'm in my anxious brain, Corey.
Actually,
that's
true. Quite often it's a positive story, but you always find something negative about
I'm
it.
I'm just so miserable.
I think that kind of explains your mental state, doesn't it? Anyway, dogs are man's best friend, cats are man's rude flatmates, and foxes are these kind of weird, wild cat-dog creatures.
I love foxes so much.
Yeah, I love them too. But, you know, we bred dogs from wolves, but what would happen if you tried to make a dog out of a fox?
It would be
a dog.
As in you tried to breed a dog from fox.
No, you tried to domesticate fox.
Domesticated fox. It'd be really cute, that's what it would be.
It would be cute, wouldn't it? Little faces.
I don't know, what would happen?
Well, I'm
going to tell you what would happen. Okay. That's what today's story's about.
Yay! Have you guys seen those videos on YouTube of the man who has a fox in his back garden and he just
probably.
He just comes up to him and goes, hey, it's so lovely.
No.
You have... How dare you?
I've seen... videos of cute foxes and people going
a lot of fox videos, so, not just for this. I just like foxes. So I'm gonna tell you first about a little man called, I don't know how little he is. I'm gonna tell you about a man called Dmitry Belyaev.
Okay.
Belyaev.
From where did he originate?
Dmitry, that's Russia, right?
yeah Well, the Soviet Union.
Yeah,
thereabouts.
Same difference.
So in the late 1930s, Dmitry.
Just call him
Dmitry was a student at the Ivanova Agricultural Academy in Moscow.
Nice.
After he graduated, he was in World War II, you know, as a lot of people were around.
Yeah.
It was a big thing.
Popular pastime around that time.
You know, you look at people's hobbies and fighting in that big old war was like number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't really...
It was a really good sequel.
Stop.
I'm just waiting for the trilogy to be...
Stop it.
I don't know, it kind of got unrealistic, you know?
No, they finally had a good villain. That was the thing.
Yeah, someone for everyone.
Hitler was a really good villain.
Stop it.
I heard he's coming back in the sequel.
Stop it.
It's because they've got the Infinity Stones down. They can just do the timing.
Yeah, and then he, after World War II, he didn't die, and he got a job at the Institute for Fur Breeding Animals in Moscow. I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, hang on.
No. Oh.
Hang on. Is it animals that they're breeding it for fur to kill and take their fur?
I forgot.
Corey, it's been like you forgot.
I forgot.
It's been like 2 minutes of the episode, and I'm already sad. You lied to me.
Did you tell him that there'd be nothing sad so you could make that pun?
No, I didn't. I genuinely forgot saying it again. I genuinely did. It did slip my mind. It gets better.
Does it?
It doesn't get after this point.
Okay.
There is nothing sad.
I'll be sure to tell you if there is.
There's nothing sad whatsoever. Okay. I promise you. So he was, you know, he was breeding animals quite a lot there. For purposes we won't go into. But then, yeah, and then he left.
That's sad. To start,
he stopped skinning animals for their
fur.
Another man out of a job, huh?
He left.
Terrible.
Celebrate.
That's why we need Brexit. I made myself sad.
Sad. Stop it.
Can I change my vote?
He kind of had this idea after, you know, breeding all of these animals. He was thinking, and he'd read one of Darwin's books. He was thinking about how a lot of domesticated animals are quite similar. You know, they're very nice. They've got floppy ears, got short, curly tails, and they look like babies.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So he was thinking about that, and it got him into studying how to turn foxes into domesticated animals.
Right.
But to get into that, I need to jump back into genetics.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa, whoa,
that's a really good intro to genetics. Do you guys know anything about genetics whatsoever?
Well, we've talked about it on various occasions on this podcast.
Four little things called AGTC.
Yeah.
Yep. It's made of deoxyribonucleic acid.
DNA.
Yeah.
Were you asked if I know anything? Those are some things.
There's also a bit of RNA in there.
It was somewhere. More the fact that you said, yeah. And it's more the fact that you said it's made out of deoxyribonucleic acid.
Not it is.
Without saying what it is.
Sure. Deoxyribonucleic acid is made out of deoxyribonucleic acid. Perfectly acceptable statement there.
Cyclical, but acceptable.
Yes.
Yeah, there is some RNA as well. Do you know anything about Mendelian genetics?
No.
You don't know who Gregor Mendel was?
I have heard the name Mendel, but it may be a different Mendel.
It might have been Ben Mendelsohn, who's an actor.
No, I've heard the name Mendel on its own. Okay. But I don't know who from.
Oh, Gregor Mendel, probably.
Maybe.
Some Mendel.
A Mendel, yeah.
I imagine there's a few Mendels out there.
Yeah, he was a bit of a mental case. Anyway.
Was he?
No, he's quite a smart man.
He was going for it. It's a joke.
I was almost sad.
It was a joke, yeah. Anyway. So he was the guy that kind of figured out with his peas. You remember this? About how to
James's face.
I was like, I'm sorry.
He kind of figured out genetic inheritance using peas by breeding different people.
Oh, using peas.
Peas.
Yeah,
peas.
Like, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, his peas.
His pee.
But if you think I said, oh no.
I thought you were going to say his pee.
No, his peas.
Okay.
The
How
food.
Did he do that?
He just bred different pea plants together. When he bred two tall plants, they got taller. He was the one that kind of figured out dominant and recessive genes. So before that, they didn't really have a strong idea for how genetics works. I think they generally thought that it was like paint. If you mix blue with red, you get purple.
That does make sense, you know.
It's silly.
Yeah.
No, but it makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
It makes a bit of sense. Yeah. When actually how genetics works is for every gene, you've got two alleles, which is two different types of the gene.
Yeah.
One you get from your mum, and get this, one you get from your dad. Crazy.
Oh, I didn't see that coming.
Wow.
Yeah. And they can either be dominant or recessive. Dominant means they take over and they say, okay, I'm the brown-eyed gene. Any other genes that are in here? Not going
to
work.
And crucially, it doesn't need another copy of itself in order to assert dominance.
That's exactly it.
Which is the opposite of a recessive gene.
Which does need another copy.
Like being ginger.
Yes. So recessive genes...
I wish I took biology.
Yeah, right. It's great. Recessive genes need to team up to be, you know, the dominant gene. Whereas dominant genes can just be one person.
What happens if you have two recessive genes?
Then
of different types?
Hmm?
Two different recessive genes.
Okay, so... I was going to say this. This is incredibly simplified. It's not just a case of if you've got one, this and that. There are different types of dominant genes. There are different types of recessive genes. Usually,
some genes are more dominant than others?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's what I was about to say.
It's like a hierarchy.
Exactly. Nice. But there's lots of different modes of genetics. This is just at its basest, simplest form. You've got two different types and one type is dominant over the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The gasp. I answered the question in my head. Doesn't matter.
Go ahead. Do enlighten us.
I was going to ask, can two recessive genes that are fairly strong recessive genes overpower a fairly weak dominant gene, but then that doesn't work because you only have two in every pair?
Yeah, unless you've got some genetic deformity, in which case you would probably be dead.
Oh.
Depending.
Probably would be.
And so, interestingly, dominant genes can be good or bad, and so can recessive. Genes are kind of completely... opposed to morality. They're amoral.
When you say good or bad, do you mean that they can be destructive to the organism they're in?
Yeah, they can, you know, they can do something good for you, they can do something bad for you. They can kill you or make you better. So one dominant gene is one for dwarfism. So if you've got one of the genes, you will be someone with dwarfism. If you've got two of the genes, then you will be dead because you won't survive coming out of the womb.
What?
Yes, that's, yeah. So
what about if you have a C-section?
Well, no. I mean, as in you died as a child. Not so much. It's not the coming out of the womb that's the issue. It's the developmental problems.
Right.
But then like equally, you could have two recessive genes and be ginger, and you know, that's pretty bad for your life as well.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Thank you.
I'm sorry, mate.
Look where you are today.
I am doing all right now. Yeah, doing. Yeah.
Intersex people are more common than gingers.
No, apparently. I thought they were roughly the same.
I thought
it was slightly more.
Wow, fascinating.
Like by a hair's breadth, like not greatly
more.
Yeah,
sure. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I feel pretty rare.
Yeah, you're both. That's but like two in one.
Yeah.
Don't they think most intersex people don't know they're intersex?
Oh yeah, you can completely not know. So yeah. You can have gonads inside of you, which is essentially...
Undescended testicles.
Yeah, undescended testicles. Or you can have ovaries if you think you're male.
Right.
Yeah, it can go either way.
Wow.
Yeah, the more you know. So anyway, what we figured out here is that genetics is a case of you take one from your mom, one from your dad, you mix them up a bit, and see what you've got, dominant or recessive. Dominant traits are more easily passed down. Recessive traits, obviously, less easily passed down. We good?
Yeah.
Now we can get into dogs and foxes.
Now we can get into dogs and foxes.
Yeah, so back onto Belyayev, Dmitry Belyayev. So he'd read a Darwin book.
Corey has definitely practiced saying that name before recording.
He went on to text-to-speech.
I did.
Belyayev.
I heard Belyayev. How to pronounce
Belyayev. Yeah.
Is there any of those like spoof
parody ones
where it goes like Belaboofaloofy?
Yes, maybe. I don't know. I didn't find them. So like I said, he read a Darwin book, specifically The Variation of Animals and Plants Under Domestication, published in 1868. And after his experience working in the fur factory, he was thinking about how animals became domesticated and all gained similar traits. I've said some of them, some more of them are they're less stressed because they've got lower stress hormone levels. Their fur looks more mottled and they have long reproductive seasons.
Interesting.
Longer than wild animals.
So Why?
Because it's safer, presumably.
You
don't want a dog that's like, you know, popping a new one out every other month.
And I guess also because you like, especially a female of any species, it's quite intensive from a food point of view and from an energy point of view to be in season. Mm. So if you've got a reliable, constant source of food, then maybe it extends. Yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Who knows? We don't know.
I don't know.
Or maybe we do know. Anyway, let's move on to what we do know. So today we call this group of traits domestication syndrome, which is effectively just a name for animals getting more cute and nice. It is. That's really what it is. Because obviously domestication is something we've done to a lot more animals than you'd probably initially assume. Can you think of any other animals that we've domesticated other than cats and dogs?
There was a weird one I saw recently. We've domesticated...
No, that's just Noah.
Does he have domestication syndrome? No, he actually doesn't.
No.
He is feral.
We've domesticated rats. We've domesticated...
Yeah, no.
That's what I was referring to. Monkeys?
No.
Or chimps?
No.
No.
Can I try?
Yes.
Pigs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cows?
Yes.
Chickens?
Yes.
Lizards?
No.
Uh-huh.
So domestication...
Spiders?
Let me tell.
So domestication doesn't just mean that we have it. Like, it doesn't mean this is in my house.
They've changed in order to benefit or like in some way. Yeah.
Yeah, so a domesticated animal isn't like a wild animal that you just keep in your house. I mean, put it this way.
Pigeons.
Yes, kind of. Mostly birds are kind of less so, but chickens and pigeons,
birds
a lot more.
Ready.
Effectively, you kind of want an animal that is not scared to be around humans, that doesn't act like a wild animal.
Yeah.
They don't have the wild type behaviors. Like your dog isn't suddenly going to start trying to hunt you or any other small animals that you have around it. Cats are the worst. If you're going to talk about cats, they're the worst.
Question.
Yes.
One of the things that happens when you have an animal that you've brought up from, say, like a kitten or a puppy or whatever, like from a baby, is they sort of develop almost like a mirror personality to yours. Like they become in some way, they take on your traits or they take on traits that are beneficial to you, giving them food, things like that. Does that happen in non domesticated animals, or is that a domestic animal trait that they sort of develop a personality to suit your personality?
Domesticated animals are more social. So that's probably, again, I don't know this for sure. That's probably more down to the animals, domesticated animals being more social. So with wild animals that you rear from infancy, they will be more affectionate slightly towards the person that's raised them.
Yeah.
Possibly, but they could also just not be and be a complete wild animal.
Because that's interesting, because that essentially, like, if you take, once you're born, then you do all your learning inside of your brain, mostly. I mean, you have muscle memory and stuff, but you do your learning and social learning inside your brain. And then you also have your genetic code, which your genetic code is still going, catch mice or be a wild animal. You could have a kitten and release it into the wild and it would sort of do all right as long as it was raised by a mother that understood it and could teach it. And so does that mean that potentially domestic animals are putting more weight on the contents of their brain than the contents of their genome?
So no, their genome just, so their genes have changed to be more so domesticated.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting into. So you could release a kitten, but if you were to release a rat or a dog, not going to fare as well. Yeah, like you're
really a rat?
Fancy rats are the names for so you've got wild rats, you've got fancy rats.
Yeah,
fancy rats. Look, if we let our three rats out, they would not
really.
They're not good. They're very smart, and I love them, and they're very intelligent. But they're just not fit for like living on the streets. They wouldn't be able to take it. One of them squeaks when he just feels anxious.
Oh, like me.
Yeah, exactly.
Exit poll, exit poll.
You hear them wrestling and one of them will just start squeaking. And I'm like, you're not hurt. I can see you're not hurt. Just shut up.
So they just want attention.
Some rats. So I've obviously I've been on a lot of rat groups. And someone posted about how one of her rats would just sit and squeak because he wasn't getting enough attention. Oh. And he'd pretend to be sad. In the same way that your cat would just meow.
Like the parrot I told you about.
Oh, yeah.
That was like imitating baby cries to get attention. Oh,
that was still the creepiest video.
It's odd, isn't it? So you're right. You've said pigs. You said cows. Horses as well. So we've domesticated animals for a lot of different reasons. You know, transport horses. Just being friends. Dogs.
That's what my cat is. Not my pet, my friend.
Well, cats are more for like pest control, aren't they?
No, she only brings me rats when I don't feed her. If I run out of wet food, I'll be delivered a cat.
Cats are originally for pest control.
My cat hasn't killed a single thing ever.
Cat's pathetic.
But I once saw him smack a spider unconscious, didn't kill it, waited till it got back up and then smacked it again. And then waited till it got back up and then smacked it again. Didn't kill it, didn't eat it, just kept smacking it.
I've had to hold him up to the ceiling so that he could swat at a fly. Like he couldn't figure out how to get it and he was getting very annoyed.
I saw him catch a fly so and just then release it.
He's not good. He's not good. If you let him in the wild, he would definitely survive like 10 minutes max.
He got beaten up in the garden the other day by another cat.
He did.
He did.
He felt really sorry for himself for ages
afterwards.
You know how we've sort of bred cats, especially, and dogs to be, they look visually more like their baby selves and they act a bit like baby selves.
So that's not intentional.
Right.
Yeah. Continue.
Well, what I'm wondering is, do they also have like stunted development? Like, do they become adult more slowly? Because my cat is like 4 or something and she still is like a baby.
No, it's because we baby them.
Is it because we baby them?
I think it's because we baby them. Yeah. So I'm getting into some of this later on, but most of that is by accident. Like generally what I'll say this later because this is the crux of it. So the main trait we're looking for when we're domesticating an animal, whether it's for food or for friends or for transport, is you want it to be tame.
Yes.
By which I mean you don't want the animal to be scared of you or to attack you or to not like you.
Just chilled out.
Yeah, a chill animal. So when you're breeding them for domestication, you want to make sure that they like being around you. That's the trait that you look for. Even if you're doing it kind of by accident, you're more likely to keep and breed
and feed.
And feed the animals that are friendlier and nicer. So those are the ones that are the traits that are gonna continue to get passed on. Mm. Which is what's happened. But like I've said a number of times before, domestication syndrome means that their ears get floppier, their tails get curlier, and they look more like babies, which happens across most domesticated animals, and we didn't really know why that was. And that's kind of what Belyaev wanted to look into. So I'm just going to go into a little case study on dogs. You were saying that we bred dogs to look, or other animals to look more like their, like,
baby selves.
Baby selves. Yeah. Most of dog development was by accident. So we've bred them to have more facial expressions, but not on purpose. So we've only just figured this out in the past few years. So dogs were domesticated about 33,000 years ago. And now they've got this completely different facial muscle in their eyebrows that allows them to raise their eyebrows to make little puppy dog eyes.
Oh yeah, that is cute.
Wolves
it?
Don't have that muscle.
Wow.
They've got a muscle there,
so it's moved,
but it's not a moving, it's right. not a muscle for moving skin.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's just spontaneously appeared.
Is that because they watch us moving our eyebrows and so they try to imitate us?
Well, it's probably because
or just because we like to breed
the ones
dogs.
That were able to do it, we thought were cuter, we fed them and bred them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's the case. When you're, it's basically the same as breeding any kind of breed of dog, except you're just breeding it to be cute and nice. Mm.
Yeah,
and that's what they are. But the oldest breed of dog, which is the Siberian Husky, mm-hmm. or one of the oldest breeds
Ooh,
of dog,
good
that
name.
Doesn't have that muscle.
They missed
they
out.
They do look weirdly inexpressive in the eyes, actually.
They do, don't they? Yeah. You think about it and you're just like, what are you thinking, man?
It's because that's why part of what it makes it a wolf, I guess. Like why we perceive it as a wolf. It's yeah, more wolf-like.
Because that's got, yeah. It's really interesting, to be honest, how we've now learned to understand the facial expressions of animals. So if you watch almost any film animated and has an animal sidekick, if that animal is not a dog, then it's going to act like a dog. Unless, of course, it's a cat.
Wow.
You've got three types of animals in films. You've got cats, dogs, and animals that do dog things. So Tangled, the horse in Tangled,
does dog things.
Is a dog. Mm. You know?
Stuart Little.
But is that...
is a dog.
Is that because... I wonder, is that because we have... we are applying dog behavior to those animals, or is it because we have an inherent sort of internal sense of how a subordinate would act?
No.
Because that, like when you have like films where like someone's got like a person who's their slave, they act like a dog as well. That's probably based on having a dog,
so
I guess.
That's one kind of avenue of the way that dogs act, that you would have a person act or another animal act. But from reading the interviews and from reading kind of studies on these films, it is just to make them like dogs, because you can understand a dog far better than you can understand a horse. You know, if a dog is wagging its tail, we all know what that means.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we've kind of co-evolved to, and it is co-evolution. We've evolved to understand dogs more, and they've evolved to
understand us,
get more food from us. Yeah, exactly. Belyaev was really interested in all of this, and he decided to put this kind of theory of breeding to the test to see how exactly domestication syndrome actually happened. He decided to work with the kind of animal that he knew best, which was the silver fox, which is a type of red fox.
Does it have a silver back?
It's just like silver.
What?
It's a silver. Oh, but it's a literal silver fox.
Oh, so it's silver, but it's a type of...
It's a type of red fox.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. It doesn't have any red on it. No.
Right.
It's a type of red fox.
It's a type of red fox, but it is silver.
It's a silver red fox.
Sure.
Much in the same way that, say...
that was brown.
Yes. Or
like white grapes are green.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
No, not like that. No. It's like saying that red grapes are simply a type of green grape, which happen to be red.
Are
they though?
No.
Okay.
So he wanted to breed these into being domesticated. Obviously, they're wild animals at the start, and we'll see where he ended up. So every generation, he and his team, they tested hundreds of foxes, and they would only take the top 10% and breed them on to the next generation. Top 10% being the tamest of them. They developed a tame score for how tame a fox was. So they scored a fox on the scale, and they decided, okay, you are, say, 9 out of 10 for tameness. So you're in the top. You're in the top 10. There you go. Off you go. You can have sex now.
And what the other ones, they just
skinned them. Probably. I don't know.
No.
I'm joking. No. They didn't. They didn't do that. No. They didn't do it.
But the nice foxes.
They're good. Yeah. The nice. No. All of the foxes lived until they died, which everything has to do.
Yeah, that's not sad. That's fine.
Yeah, good. So obviously by doing this, they had a measure of how tame the foxes were over generations. So this began in 1959 in Siberia. Not going to try the rest of the names. It looks like Novosibirsk.
Okay, a place in Siberia.
Place in Siberia. He immediately recruited a 25-year-old named Lyudmila Trut to his team.
Yes.
Trut, he quickly became the lead researcher. And so he worked on every aspect of it with Belyaev. Trut, in 2018, turned 85 years old.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah, no. As far as I'm aware, he's still alive.
Oh,
Belyaev died in 1985.
Oh. Oh.
He was old.
That was a while ago.
He was a fox skinner, though, so whatever.
Yeah, but well, then he became a fox maker.
Maker.
He built the... I don't really know.
He died before you were born, so did it technically exist?
No, that didn't happen, did it?
No.
Oh, everything before I was born didn't happen. Yeah, we've established that.
Also, many times.
Technically, all these foxes didn't die.
It's fine, because you guys are younger than me, so you all happened.
Yes, we all have.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well done.
And we're still happening.
Yes. We've not ceased to happen.
As long as I stay alive, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm honestly tempted to kill you to find out what happens. I just want to see.
Like, my existence is dependent on your survival.
If I snuff you out and we all disappear, then it's fine.
What will happen, Corey, is you'll go to prison, so...
Well, not if you stop existing.
Yes. So you'll either go to prison or into non-existence, so...
Either then, is better than this.
We'll have a conclusion either way.
Yeah, and I'm in a prison every Monday with you guys.
It's Thursday today.
Shh, don't ruin
Welcome
the magic.
Welcome to another episode of The Prison Guys.
The Pry Guys. P-R-I.
Sin, yes. Yes, we got the joke. Thank you, Corey.
I was simply helping the people at home.
So Trek.
Yeah. What?
Trek. Truck.
Trut.
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 Tell us about Trut.
I'm telling you about Trut. He's obviously done this for like 60 years. A lot of stuff has been done.
Ooh, Trut.
It's a while.
Yeah.
He's a 60-year-old man.
He's an 85-year-old
man. I thought he was a 25-year-old man.
You said 85.
That was when he started.
Oh, okay.
In 1959.
I thought, you know, when he started, he'd done it for 60 years. I was like, geez, this guy's starting a new career.
As of now, he's been doing it for about 60 years. So there's a lot of experiments that have been done. But I'm going to focus on just a few little tiny snippets. So there were a few published in 1999, 2009, and 2017. And generally, what happened here was they started with a population of wild foxes. And within six generations, which is about 6 years, because the foxes have an annual kind of breeding regimen.
Mm-hmm.
in 6 years, they had like fully tame foxes. Pretty much. They would lick your hands. They would whine when you left. They liked to be petted. You could pick them up. And they wagged their tails when humans approached.
So cute.
Imagine a little fox wagging his little tail.
So nice.
That's like so yipping. Cute. I go to work early in the morning and there's always foxes on the street. They always run away from me and I just want to say hello.
You just need to get them, breed them for six generations.
Yeah.
You need to catch two foxes and then you're good.
No, I think I'll be moved out by then.
You can take a fox with you.
Maybe.
It's like growing an avocado tree. You know, you put in work for 6 years and then you finally get to bear the fruits of your...
And you get to have two avocados.
Probably won't taste very good either.
6-year-old avocados.
So these foxes were really tame, and that is really fast after 6 years of just intensive... selective breeding.
Mm.
Obviously, in real life, it wasn't quite so quick.
No, because the ones that were being deselected still did actually mate.
Yeah, and here we were like, man, you are top ten at 100 tame. You get to do it.
It's like the opposite of Marxism.
It is, isn't it? It's like
the
eugenics.
Top 10% continue to rise, whilst the proletariat are doomed
we
forever.
Must stop the bottom 10%.
Actually, in reading this story. I found another, so this article I was reading had this little sidetrack that is a full story for another time about the proletariat and how Russia almost destroyed science.
What?
Yes. We'll get to that at some point.
Okay.
Yeah, just remember. So yeah, that means that Belyaev was right. After 6 years, they got tame foxes. So breeding, you know, and genetics definitely had something important to do with it.
Are foxes particularly easy to tame, though, on a genetic level?
Well,
could you tame anything?
More or less. I mean, mammals.
Really?
Well, mammals, really. If you think about it, you need to tame... Your parameters for taming something are, it needs to be somewhat social as is. And it needs to want food from you. Oh, and not want to kill you too much.
Too much.
I do wonder if my cat wants to kill me a little bit.
Like, I mean, if somebody wants to kill you a lot, it's going to be a lot harder because they'll probably kill you, you know, if you're breeding them.
Yeah.
And say reptiles, they're not really quite as social as mammals, so it wouldn't...
They have a totally different brain.
Yeah, it wouldn't really work as well. Mammals and birds, stick to them.
Okay.
And maybe some fish.
I will.
Who knows? You know.
Can you...
No,
I'm domesticate fish?
I'm joking. Why
they
would you do
that?
They
come up to you for a little cuddle?
No, I don't think you can.
Yes, you can. I've decided.
Try domesticating an octopus. That's probably the closest you're going to get.
Ah, okay.
Could you do that?
I think they're too smart.
True.
You're not domesticating the octopus. You're simply entering an agreement with it.
Yeah. Sign a legal contract with the octopus. You could sign eight contracts at once.
He squirts the ink out of himself and just spreads it.
Wow.
He could sign so many things.
Wow.
Oh, this pen's out. You want to...
Hey, mate.
Splat all over the contract instead.
Thanks, mate.
All of these domestication syndrome kind of symptoms came out in these foxes. By generation 15, they had half the level of stress hormones than the original generation.
Oh.
Which is insane. Half the level of stress hormones. And they also had way more serotonin. So they were way happier. And serotonin is a chemical that makes animals less angry. It makes them less angry.
Oh.
Less aggressive.
Mm.
Probably because their anger comes from anxiety, which is the same in humans. You can learn a little something about yourself, Luke.
It makes them less aggressive, but it also makes them higher up in the social chain. And so they do believe that if they need to have aggression, then they can use it, I think.
Good old lobsters.
They took longer to have sex. You know, they would have a kid, wait for a bit. So it wasn't just 1 year each time now.
So that means what? That they are less anxious to pass their genes on?
I think you're looking into this too much as though the fox is like feeling things.
I don't mean that. I mean that on a on a level of just purely the drives of the animal, is it that it's satisfied and happy so it doesn't need to...
So they're just not in heat.
Oh, so okay.
Animals,
right,
so
okay.
Animals have, like, a lot of animals have breeding seasons.
Sure.
So they're just, there's breeding seasons are longer apart. And they found that there was a hotspot for these changes on a specific chromosome, which was chromosome 15. And there was a specific gene, SORCS, which is associated with synaptic plasticity. Do you know what that means?
Yes, it can rewire its brain.
Yes, effectively. It's associated with that and memory and learning. And
so that's what I mean when you say about that. If the animal has a higher level of synaptic plasticity, i.e. it's able to rewrite its brain more effectively, that would then correlate with the likelihood of them developing a personality based on the person they're living with, because they're able to write their brain and their natural instincts that are derived from their brain more easily than one that is more... less plastic in the mind.
Harry's shaking his head.
Yeah, but they're also producing more hormones that make them more docile, and less hormones that make them angry.
That's what I mean. Is that both? It means that they are genetically more likely to do that because their brain can rewrite more effectively.
I think you're deciding on a conclusion and making. Well, I think you're deciding on a conclusion and making the evidence.
It's not, I obviously can't prove it.
I mean, it supports
the theory.
Yeah, I mean, it can.
Because if you're born with your genome, which is based on, although you've been selected for six generations, it's based on thousands of generations of past experience where you've been a wild animal, and you are born with the ability to rewrite your brain from the state that your brain is born in, which is still fairly wild to a certain extent, then you're able to shape around the world that you've been born into, which is a social world rather than an animalistic world.
So I suppose the way to test that would be to breed wild type foxes until they're domesticated, and then try and release them back into a wild type environment and see if they like humans when they're adults.
Yes.
I mean, that would be the way to test it. Just from what I've read, I don't think it's so much the case of the brain is being rewritten at the like at the point of development, so that if you were to release them to the wild, they automatically would be comfortable with that. Because I mean, in the case of say,
I don't mean they'd be comfortable with it.
They'd be capable of.
I just mean that like your ability. So if I'm born a social animal, right, an animal that's generally social. Mm-hmm. That's one thing, but then developing a personality that is a mirror image of the owner of me requires me to write to my brain in some way that is beneficial to that specific owner. Because you see animals, like especially dogs, develop a personality that is similar or a mirror to the owner. Hmm. And that requires an ability outside of the genes. It requires an ability after birth to write that to something, and it most likely would be writing to the brain. And if you have more likelihood of being plastic in your brain, in your genome, then you have a better ability to develop a personality separate to your genes, I think.
I see where you're coming from with that.
Because a clone from me and a clone, but clone of me with a different life would develop a different personality, right, and that requires plasticity.
Yeah, okay, I see what you mean. Okay. I thought you were saying that the only reason
No.
No, okay, yeah. That's totally fair. Yeah, absolutely.
I did something. I've just read a lot about plasticity of minds. It's one of my favorite subjects.
You like brains,
you should do an episode on it, don't you?
I'll do an episode on brain plasticity. That'll be fun.
Because you know a lot about that.
I do. Cool. Fun.
So, right from the start, Belyayev, not going to... Keep it in.
Okay.
Belyayev thought that the process of domestication was in part the result of a change in gene expression patterns. So, different genes being turned on. So,
with the, what's it called? Thing on top of genes?
Oh, you're talking about metagenomics?
No, epigenetics.
Oh, epigenetics. Yes, that's the word that I meant to say. And yeah. I thought my brain was like, that word is metagenomics.
That's where it's like different weights on genes. You turn them on and off post-birth.
Yeah, so yeah, you've got a lot of genes in you, but not all of them are turned on at once. Otherwise, every cell would be a monster. It would be doing everything. Yeah. what's that monster noise?
That's a monster cell.
Yeah, it's
and epigenetics is also.
I do impressions.
And epigenetics is also this thing that they're working on, the idea that you can pass on, even if your genes don't change in your lifetime, the amount of stress, as in the amount of emphasis you put on a specific gene, can potentially be passed on to your offspring. So your life experience can be coded into your potential offspring. It's the theory they're working on.
Genetic memory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it means like if I live a life that really emphasizes the genes that make me muscly, which I don't, then my child may be more likely to have a propensity to be that thing because I passed on my epigenetic code. That's my like basic understanding of it.
And that's a very succinct explanation of it.
Hey, I did two things!
Didn't say it was correct, said it was succinct.
Hey, I did one and a half things!
No, I'm good. That's good.
Thanks.
Yeah. So a recent study showed that more than 100 genes in the prefrontal cortex of the brain showed different gene expression patterns between the domesticated and aggressive foxes, which basically means that Belyayev was pretty much right. Some genes are turned on and some genes are turned off, and that's what makes a big difference with the foxes.
So does that mean that the genes for, like, say, aggression maybe are still there but are being downplayed?
Yeah, effectively. I mean, so it's the difference in kind of neural pathways and how they're formed. So the genes that are for better serotonin production could be turned on.
Can they be turned on in me?
They tried that.
I know. They did a fairly okay job.
Giant magnet on your head.
Yeah.
Did a good job, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You seem happier.
I am happier, yeah. Most definitely happier.
Maybe we need a bigger magnet. Let's go to CERN.
Stick me in the Large Hadron Collider.
Can we put our friend in here and see if it fixes him?
Yeah, cool. The Large Hadron Collider cured my depression.
Biggest TMS session ever.
Oh my god. Yeah, so someone that was working for Trutt, Anastasia Karlamova, said there's archaeological data that people made individual attempts to domesticate the fox, but the process was not finished. Possibly the reason was that the cat was domesticated at a similar time and supplanted the fox as a possible candidate to be domesticated.
Ah.
So we tried the fox before, just didn't really get far with it.
What kind of archaeological data do you find? Because there's no brain or genome left. Is the genome? I mean, suppose there's genome on the bones.
Yeah, presumably find different differences in the foxes.
Like genetic structure. Expression. Yeah. Wow.
Structural differences in the foxes, perhaps. I don't actually know what the archaeological data is.
Long legs. Foxes with long noodle legs.
That's because that's what we breed for. We breed for long legs, and that's it.
I think we actually specifically breed for shorter legs, don't we?
Some animals, yeah. Munchkins. So corgis, we... Yeah. So the reason that when you breed a corgi with
but
any other type of dog...
Long legs.
They're just true. Skinny. They've got normal sized legs.
Giraffes.
Oh, yeah, no, that's
long
like,
legs.
No, we didn't breed them.
The domestic horse is called the giraffe, James.
I don't think we've domesticated giraffes yet. Have we?
No.
No, I didn't think
you'd
so.
You'd fucking know if we had.
This is my pet
giraffe.
It'd
be a short giraffe.
Yeah, well, a horse.
Luke, shut up.
Be the pony equivalent for a giraffe.
Corgis have short legs, and whenever you breed, yeah, whenever you breed them with another dog, you get that dog, but with short
but
legs.
With short legs,
yeah,
so that's a dominant gene.
So cute.
Tiny legs is a dominant
well,
gene.
Well, yeah. So the gene
is it like dwarfism?
Effectively, so wow. Not exactly. It's specifically in the legs. It stops the proper growth of the legs at a certain point. So instead of the legs growing to their normal length, this kind of gene basically switches off leg bone growth.
Oh.
They've got a lot of other problems too, but they got cute little tiny legs. And who doesn't want to see a Doberman with little tiny legs, yeah. Huh? Or a husky?
This is the problem with genetics, is that basically if the gene for short legs is beneficial to that genome, as in we make it breed lots, it doesn't matter if the subjective experience of that dog is horrible.
Oh no, so long as it can survive long enough to pass on its genes... It's fine.
Yeah.
That's why we're seeing a massive rise in all of these kind of genetic diseases that don't happen until later in life.
Yeah. So you're never selected for them.
Well,
or
yeah.
Against
so
them.
Genetic, say cancers, that happen later on in life. Those are much more common now than they used to be because we're living longer.
Pets are living longer, yeah.
Whereas before it was never an issue because
You'd just be dead.
You'd just die
before that. You'd be dead before that, yeah. You'd be dead before
some
it killed
way or
you.
Another, yeah.
Yeah.
No life, no problems.
You'd be alive before you were dead.
So the project is still happening today, I think.
Thanks, man. Great information.
I was looking it up. And this says as of August 2016. And the videos that I were watching were posted in the past year. I am pretty sure it's still open.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they ran into financial problems around about 2016, which is very sad because they're making pet foxes for everyone. That's something that government should be funding.
What's their end goal? What's their like stated end goal for getting funding?
To understand the domestication process, how that works.
Not to make little cute foxes for friends.
Come on. Aww. Who doesn't want a little cute fox?
Yeah, why have these not broken out into like being a pet?
Well, I'll tell you why. Do you have about... $9,000 sitting around.
Oh, you blame me.
So you can buy them of the 1990s. You were able to buy them. So, you spend $8,900, and they can deliver them anywhere. But this is a Florida-based company that specifically they sell through. And it's most of that money comes from the delivery costs. But then again, these animals, they're not exactly like normal dogs. That's because they're foxes, but they're not like they're not like what you'd expect a domesticated fox to be like, because obviously they grew up in a lab.
Yeah.
So it's not a true domesticated fox. It's kind of a lab grown domesticated fox.
Wow.
Which is when you find dogs that have been in labs, they're often less social. So there's still a little ways to go with that.
Yeah.
However, I would like to point out that it is legal to own a fox in the UK.
Yeah,
it is.
Nice one.
Although the RSPCA says it's not a good idea because they're not domesticated.
Yeah,
and you're keeping a wild animal in your house.
Probably not a good idea.
Crazy person. Yeah, it's not a good idea. You keep a fox in your house, they start digging stuff up and just destroying the place.
Oh. Imagine if you were a domesticated fox in the UK and you thought that's what life was, and then you look out the back window and there's a fox in the garden and you're like, one of me.
And it's just,
and then you plot an escape route. Dun, 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 that could be a plot of a film, couldn't it?
I think that's the Fox and the Hound.
Is it? Is it?
No, hold on. There's definitely a film that is that, isn't there? No, yeah, because the fox goes back to the, yeah.
Oh well,
the fox goes back to the wild, and the dog that he was friends with, he has to kill him. But then their friendship wins out.
Great
film.
Good story.
And I'd just like to end on.
Thanks for listening. You can find the full references on.
On another point is that we've kind of domesticated ourselves. So.
Not me. I'm feral.
Yeah, buddy. I'm sure you are. Put you out in the wild. Put you out in the woods for a week. See how long you last, right? Not a week. I'll tell you that.
Depends. If it's a woods in like a national park where there's a friendly ranger.
You're not allowed to leave the woods. You get dropped in the middle of a rainforest. There you go.
Oh.
Yeah. It's probably going to be burnt down, though.
Oh, sad.
Anyway, we've domesticated ourselves. So.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so we usually think of human evolution as us getting smarter and then, you know, everything following on from that.
Yeah.
But some people think that we got nicer before we got smarter. And out of kindness, intelligence was bred. So if you look at our closest kind of relative, or one of our closest relatives, you look at the chimpanzee.
Oh,
they're assholes.
They go apeshit.
Yeah, they literally go apeshit and throw... Ape shit.
chip shit. But
yeah, there's plenty of evidence to suggest the theory that we actually had larger brains in the past, isn't there? And our brains have actually shrunk as we've sort of
Neanderthals
become.
Had massive brains, didn't they?
But brain size doesn't necessarily equate to, you know.
But people might assume that it does.
Yeah, people assume that brain size equates to intelligence. But look at the blue whale; it's massive. Stuck in the water, isn't it?
True.
Not very smart.
Stuck in the water. It's got a great life.
No, it's not. You heard about the sad, maybe that sad whale that sings at a different frequency than all the other whales?
Probably so it doesn't have any friends. That's stuck on the land.
Yeah.
We're not stuck on the land. We can swim.
Well,
put
we
them
can,
on the land. What can they do? Die.
We can dip.
Jeez.
Apparently, human evolution selected for cooperation, tolerance, and just gentleness, which then allowed us to stop killing each other, stop doing all those little battles we had, and just work on getting smarter.
That's lovely. I suppose because if you had like a tribe and you were all working together and one person was trying to like be like that, you just kick him out the tribe.
Yeah. It's the same reason that socialism works over capitalism.
Vibes, man.
It doesn't though.
It does. Thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description.
Hang on. We need to end the show properly.
I love the idea. And I would love for it to work. Please. That would be great. Anyway, now you can end the episode.
That's the end of the show.
Thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or support us at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I'm not Corey everywhere.
I'm Jamkin everywhere.
I'm Luke Cuffer everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.